all the farts, all starts. Guys, welcome to season 2, episode 2 of A Podcast of One's Own. I'm Kate.
Oh, I'm Skye. Hello.
I'm Kara.
And we're here today to talk about season 3 of Game of Thrones, the HBO show that everyone in the world has watched. But before that, because it is Pride Week in Toronto, we're going to be talking about the idea of pride as it applies to the everyday feminist. And I don't have a question specifically phrased, so I guess ladies, I just want us to talk. What's it like? What do you think about gay pride? What do you think about the idea of pride? What is feminist pride? What would that look like? Well, design a flag.
I will first just say my immediate thoughts about pride that I always say first when I start talking about pride, which is the pride celebrations are always putting forth this gay male, specifically gay men, specifically white gay men, and connecting them to, like, partying, drugs, non-monogamous lifestyles. Like, that's kind of the idea of gayness that it's putting forth in gay pride, dominantly. There's always these, like, sub-parties of, like, lesbians or genderqueer or other people, but it's dominantly, like, just putting out into the media that gayness is white, gay men.
Yeah, the media coverage, the first thing that you'll see of Pride is going to be, like, the floats and some bodies and some dancing and some revelry, certainly. Yeah,
some very sexualized.
Yeah, very, very sexualized, that's true.
I don't dislike Pride, so I don't want to put forth that message, because I think there are some great things about Pride, and I'm going up for Pride, and I'm excited about it, but I do think, like, not just, I agree with Kara, but the other thing is, like, I think that the whole, like, neoliberal message of queerness, of, like, being your best self, and coming out and realizing who you truly are, and then being fulfilled by kind of, like, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, but, like, in a kind of gay queer way, get turned up really loud at Pride. And this idea of, like, that, like, kind of essential self, like, really comes to the forefront in Pride, that particular discourse, which I don't even necessarily think is wrong, or is something, there's anything wrong with it, but I think that it's true that there's, like, really one very, very, very loud message in Pride, and all the other kinds of identities and kinds of ways of being queer and gay get kind of turned down during Pride. No?
Do you think that, like, do you think that the, this is sort of tied into the fact that it started, like, as a gay pride rather than a queer pride thing? Like, the idea of going more to, like, the binaries rather than the spectral, or?
Yeah, I don't know the history of Pride, so I'm not sure. But it does also, I think if it were putting forth different dominant images, it might not have been taken up so much. Because, at least in the media, when you're talking about gay marriage, it's always, like, white gay men getting married. And so that's, and when you say gay, I think generally people think of men, and cisgendered men.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of history in queer culture of sidelining non-cisgendered people, and genderqueer people, and bi people, and, you know, different groups. It seems like I'm really hateful towards Pride in all of the things that I'm saying, but I do think it's incredibly important, and we should celebrate it, but we should maybe open up ways of celebrating it.
So it's kind of just that, like, Pride has been sort of, like, also has a patriarchal ruling? Is that what you're kind of getting at? Like, it also has, like,
I don't know if I would call it patriarchal.
What would you call it?
Just, you know, dominant.
Just has a norm. It just has, like, it's got a norm to it, and it's got a mainstream, basically. Like, I think, like, most media, and kind of, like, basically any form, well, really, like, anything, like, Pride has, like, a mainstream Pride, and then there's fringy Pride. Yeah. And the mainstream Pride is catering to a very, very particular and very specific demographic. And there are, for sure, resistances. Like, there are, like, events at Pride that are directed towards lesbians or people of color or, like, people who are left out of Pride. There's lots of, like, events that are kind of like the anti-Pride Pride event, mm-hmm. like lots of that kind of stuff. But they're certainly not, like, the mainstream conceptualization, and they're certainly not visible to people who don't want to take part in Pride or people on the outside. And if Pride is in some ways about promoting sort of equality to people who are not gay or queer or part of those communities, to people who are, like, straight and are not going to the Pride Parade, there's a lot that those people are not seeing. If that's what it's about. If it's about celebrating, like, you know, like, certain, like, comfort with your identity and stuff like that, again, a lot of identities are kind of pushed into the fringe. But are they pushed into the fringe more than they are in, like, everyday LGBT?
Well, it's interesting because the queer or LGBTQI communities are supposed to be more inclusive. But they find that, you know, there's studies of new queer immigrants coming to Canada and, like, looking to queer groups, and mm-hmm. they can't be accepted to them. They're even sidelined by the own groups that they want to be a part of, that are supposed to be a part of them because of color of skin or race or nationality. And so it's just ironic that the group that is made for them, that's in quotes, for them, is not even for them.
Well, that's what I mean, though. Like, exactly.
So they're sidelined, but it's sidelined even, like, so brutally that it's like, no, but this is your role, and if you don't even fit into this one,
yeah,
it's even worse.
Yeah, and so what I'm kind of asking there is, like, in light of that, we know that this isn't just Pride. It's not like, oh, the LGBT community has no problems at all in terms of excluding certain people or populations or who's allowed in and who's not really allowed into certain community events. We know that that's a problem kind of in, like, day-to-day living. Is Pride, like, does it amplify that, or is it just a reflection of the issues that are already existing within those communities?
I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, I have no idea. I think the tricky thing about Pride is that, particularly, like, in our country in terms of politics, like, it doesn't function so much as an aspect about visibility, and it's more about celebration. And my intuition is that it's very well and good and fun, but it's more about the party than it is about the message.
Yeah.
And I don't know, would it be better to have a separate event that's about queer visibility or about, like, trans visibility? Like, would it make sense to take what Pride did in the 60s about actually forwarding a political message and, like, normalizing something that was at the fringes of society? Like, would it make more sense to make that a separate event, or does lumping it all together ultimately damage the more fringe queer communities? Like,
right.
What do we think?
Oh, it just overpowers any message those communities might be trying to promote.
Yeah, like, if you de-heteronormized, or I guess if you made Pride less homogenous, less homos in Pride. Am I right, ladies?
There is, like, this term of, like, homonormativity as well.
Yeah,
become very popular in relation to things like Pride and, like, sort of neoliberal discourses on gayness of, you know, you can be gay and be yourself and be proud, but these are the very specific ways that you're allowed to do that.
Yeah, and I think you bring up an interesting point of, like, you know, it's kind of like slut walk. There's, like, these battling things going on. So you have this political message about victimization, and then you also have this, like, celebratory, the first word that comes to mind is, like, burlesque.
Yeah.
Potentially.
there's like, an entertainment and aspect to it, and there's, like, a performance to it.
And so how do you pull apart these separate ideas, or are they so intrinsic to each other?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm ambivalent, because I think that as much as it's, like, a dominant, homonormative, whatever idea that it's putting forth, it's also, like, well, we should party. You know, we should have fun. This should be a time of fun and celebration. And who cares if we're telling old white people, you know, if we're changing their minds about anything?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just have fun.
Yeah, and maybe it is.
This is our time to maybe, like, take over certain areas of the street.
Yeah,
and
maybe,
and,
like,
have a reason to celebrate with each other.
Sure.
And do that.
Yeah, maybe there's a power to the idea that it's, like, not about the heterosexual people anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's interesting, I think, with any political movement, that it's hard to make into one cohesive thing. Mm-hmm. Because there, to get so many people, it's like there's all these separate ideas.
But I would question if you would want it to be one cohesive thing.
Yeah,
like,
I don't...
You know, like, I think that, like...
Like a classy like political mixer.
Yeah, trying to, like, have, like, trying to... Especially when you're talking about, like, identity politics and stuff like that. Like, so trying to kind of promote, like, let's move towards this particular thing. Like, I'm not... I think that kind of stuff worked a long time ago in a way. I don't think that that works anymore. I think what we need to see now is, like, an overwhelming proliferation of different kinds of messages and discourses around a particular topic.
But then that in itself is a specific discourse of multiplicity. So they'd all be agreeing on the discourse of multiplicity.
Yeah.
So there is some inherent thing. It's like there's a lot of different thoughts going on in Occupy, but there's an inherent rebellion aspect. There's a lot of different thoughts going on in the late 60s, but it's all about peace.
Yeah.
And so there is something still tying it together. And I think multiplicity of voices is really important. But that's still like... No one's arguing then, under that, no one's arguing that one be louder than the other, or that this is the right way. It's more of a listening to other people, too.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's a good point.
Thanks.
But one more thing. Oh, sorry, I thought you were wrapping up.
Oh, no, I was just saying thanks.
I think one... Yeah, okay, so before we finish, I think we've been, like, critical of Pride, but obviously it's really, really important. Maybe we should spend a couple minutes talking about why it actually is really great.
Go ahead. You start. Right after you.
Okay. Well, I don't know, actually.
I did say, if you noticed, that I think the importance of celebrating and taking back parts of cities. Overtake.
But are you overtaking the city when you're celebrating Pride? How so?
That all of these... specifically heteronormative places in the city, because it's not just taking place in the village, it's kind of more dispersed throughout the city, that they have events celebrating gayness.
They also rename streets, kind of.
Oh,
like,
really?
On Queen Street, it's now Queer Street.
Awesome.
And cute things. Like, Toronto does, little adorables.
Look at that. That's exactly, like, taking over streets.
Though I also have to say about that it's, like, I work in a store on this
Queer Street.
And there's also a commercial aspect to that, and there is, like, there is a commercialization to Pride that I actually don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing, because that does, in terms of what people were looking for from Pride 50, 60 years ago, having it be something that's, like, marketable and mainstream kind of seems like an endpoint.
Yeah. It is kind of like that's how our society operates, is through this capitalist marketing commercialization. So not to have anything be real, it must be monetizable.
Yeah. And so, like, while I don't necessarily agree with, like, that system personally, the fact that this...
Tell us what it be.
Yeah, like, that this fringe exists now in a mainstream capitalist way is kind of, like...
That's a really interesting point.
Yeah, I think that is interesting, but, like, I guess... Like, okay, so in terms of, like, heterosexuality, like, how is that marketed in the same way? Like, on those shops on Queen Street? Like, it's not marketed explicitly. It doesn't have to be explicit. It doesn't have to be kind of, like, made explicit. And to, like, have such intentionality with then consuming a queer identity, like, there is a real distinction there between, like, those two identities still, like, in terms of, like, what you buy as a straight person and what you buy when you're trying to be, like, pridey or, like, queer during Pride weekend, and how these stores are really trying to kind of capitalize. Like, I guess one of the things that I was sort of wondering in terms of, like, taking over the city is, like, I do feel, even though I do like Pride and I like that idea, like, part of it is kind of illusory in a way that, like, you're taking over the city for a weekend, but then it's just going to go back to the way it was. And, like, these stores are going to market and profit off you for the weekend, but then they're going to take the rainbow flags out of their windows.
Well, that's the thing about capitalism, and I agree with Kate, and I just wrote down the note so I'd remember, because I think it's a really insightful point. It's like, you know, that's how you win in kind of a democratic capitalist system, because it brings up a whole ideas of democracy and capitalism and what those things mean, because, like, generally in democracy and at least our capitalist understanding is that these subgroups just work to reinforce the norm. So we have a subgroup of queer week of Pride that you can buy for that week, but that just inherently reestablishes heteronormativity as the norm.
Yeah.
Because, like, you diverge from a week. But I think that's not a fault of Pride. You know, I
do think it's a fault
of capitalist markets. And I totally agree that the only way to win within this capitalist system is to do what Pride has done. You know? And become marketable for a short amount of time, become the second biggest group compared to heteronormativity.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I don't think it's the fault of Pride either. I guess what I'm saying is, like, I just think that this notion of, like, agency and control and, like, taking ownership is in a lot of ways, the people who are still behind the curtain are still, like, it's the same people, and it hasn't changed in the sense. So it's not that I think Pride's doing anything wrong here. I just think that, like, in a lot of ways, it's, like, it allows this, like, illusion of empowerment and progress that then vanishes when the weekend ends. So it would be nice. I mean, not that I want, like the city to look the way the city looks in Pride all the time, but it'd be nice if what Pride
so
can does.
So tiring.
Extend,
oh my God.
Everyone would be so hungover
every
all
day,
times.
Everybody would have a really serious drinking issue.
I've had like 6 conversations with people this week where they're like, gotta hit the gym hard, Pride weekend, gotta wear my tank tops. And it's like, so maybe everyone would be healthier.
Yeah.
In terms of exercise. Not healthier in terms of booze consumption.
Yeah.
But everyone's arms would look crazy. Also, imagine if we had to do Pride in, like, the winter.
That's such a funny idea.
Yeah.
I would love
a sketch winter Pride.
Of, like, Canadian Pride, which is just...
Everyone's in parkas, like, everyone looks the same.
Yeah.
We're all in our, like, Canada Goose coats. Well, yeah, I guess, I mean... It's transitioning out of Pride. I mean, earlier I told you guys to design a feminist flag, and neither of you did it. So I guess we'll come back to that later. Maybe we'll have something in the show notes. We'll all have little drawings.
I'm learning how to use Photoshop, so I might be able to make something.
Yeah.
We'll all have little versions of that. That'll be our homework for the next little while. But transitioning out of that into Game of Thrones is a little tougher than before Renly got himself murdered. I mean, there were some jokes at Renly's expense this season. I guess we could go off that.
Is there not more?
Oh, there's, like, his BF.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who was so easy to, like, seduce.
Oh, yeah! That was hilarious. Yeah, where, they just have another whore, and this time it's a man.
Yeah, it was, like, the easiest seduction of all time.
Yeah, that was just, like,
but
look at a stable
boy. Like, choosing a hairless person, because remember when Renly shaved,
Laura shaved
Renly.
Only one of his armpits always bothered me. I guess he's just going to be asymmetrical.
They weren't done yet.
mid-shave bang.
Taking a break.
Yeah. You know,
shaving's not easy.
Whenever I shave someone.
Can I bring up something? I'm thinking about growing out my armpit hair. What do you guys think?
I'm into it. I love it.
If you want to. Sure, why not?
Okay.
I think it looks cool.
Proud.
Let's save that. I think
grow
it looks cool, too.
For Pride.
I think, let's have a discussion about that as a living as a feminist question.
Oh, yeah.
Shaving. No, another episode.
Oh, because I have
lots
of thoughts about that.
Yeah, me too. I have a lot of ambivalent thoughts.
Lots of ambivalent thoughts.
Hopefully we'll watch something about hair
It happens
body
in the East, which Sky and I just saw, and we are hoping to do a little episode. There's a scene where Ellen Page shaves her armpit hair.
Oh, Ellen Page is in that.
Yeah.
Oh, she's delightful.
She is.
And Canadian.
In the books, I'm not going to spoil it, so no book spoilers in this podcast. I know. Because there's so much to talk
about. Omar dies.
Did you say Dumbledore dies?
No, Omar, but both of them. Both of them are dead.
Because there is more instances of female women queerness.
In books. That's true.
And I think there's, I look forward to spoiler. There's women queerness later.
Oh, that's the only spoiler?
That's the only spoiler.
I thought you were going to say something like a real spoiler.
No, and I look forward to when it is in the shows and then talk about it. Wow, good point, Kara.
Yeah,
I'm glad I brought that up.
That actually, the only sort of anything we've gotten close to in terms of female queerness in the show, I mean, I think we had some exposition scene with some girls banging each other.
Yeah.
And by think, I mean definitely that happened.
Yeah.
Could we characterize, I mean, I don't know, how do we look at Brienne? Is she just, like, a lady living in a tropey world? Is that her jam?
Yeah,
or do we think there's actually a gender thing going on with her?
I mean, there's definitely gender things going on with her, in terms of queerness.
Mm.
In terms of the very simplistic understanding of homosexuality, which is literally just the, desire for a same-sex person. Yeah. There's no...
Yeah, because she
there's
just...
nothing. Yeah, she, you don't she know wants if she does... Boys. We does she?
She? Oh, Renly. She was so in love with
oh,
Renly.
Oh, right. She was in the role. I totally forgot. Yeah. Yeah. So she's obviously straight, but I think that queerness in a academic, theoretical sense doesn't always have to mean just same-sex mm-hmm. desire.
No.
So I think that there's ways of understanding her in a queer context. But in terms of gender, I think, and portrayal of her, I think it's interesting because she's shown as having heterosexual desires and yet being a non-normative heterosexual looking person,
yeah.
which I think is a very interesting.
I think that's sorry.
No, go on.
I think that is a really important thing, especially in the context of the show where basically like everybody's insanely attractive.
Especially Marjorie Tyrell, who we'll get to.
Yeah. But to show somebody who is genderqueer, who kind of in the context of the show is treated as sort of abhorrent.
And but she's
abject.
Not genderqueer.
Well, like, no, but like she like queers notions of gender identities,
yeah.
And to show her having kind of desires for some of the characters in the show that are kind of thought of as being quite dreamy and quite like normative. Like,
Renly was dreamy.
Yeah, so
Jamie.
Jamie. Like, she potentially has feelings for Jamie.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Definitely. Whatever. They're so into each other. I said that.
Potentially.
Because I'm everyone.
So I did like when she stood up naked in the hot tub. Or in
yeah,
the hot tub.
Scene.
The hot tub.
Scene.
Yeah,
hot
the
tub.
Hot tub. Scene.
In the hot tub. That they
in the hot tub scene. In the hot
yeah. Yeah, Jamie's hot.
Oh, yeah.
In the scene hot tub.
You know, Brienne, the actor who played Brienne, cried a lot when she cut her hair, and Arya comforted her. The little girl
so
who.
Cute.
Because she cut her hair and she was very like, I'm just going to do it. You know.
Oh, yeah, she was awesome about that. I remember
yeah,
the little interview.
And Brienne's actor took it hard.
Gwendolyn.
Wow. Her name's
Gwendolyn
Christie. Okay, sorry. Gwendolyn Christie took it hard, which I can understand.
I'm going to take us a step back. I mean, George R. R. Martin, the author of the books, because apparently our listeners are under rocks.
Yeah.
Of the original
He's also
Game of Thrones.
Producer of the show.
Guys,
first of all, let's start with this. Game of Thrones is
based
on
a series of books. Series of books.
Called The Song of Ice and Fire.
Written by George R. R. Martin, who has, who says...
A book is...
between two covers... squiggles on a page. And so he calls himself a, quote, feminist at heart.
Love it.
Is a thing he has called himself. What was Joss Whedon's line? It was similar. Where Joss Whedon called himself a feminist? Do you remember
but,
that?
Yeah, but he didn't have, like,
I think Joss Whedon's done it, like, a million
yeah,
times.
He's been like, I am a feminist.
Okay.
Every day.
In
it's
real
not
life.
Like a lie. It's just like, hey, Joss, are you a feminist? Yeah, sure.
Like,
yeah.
Sure I am. Okay, sorry.
Yeah,
so, I've been listening to a lot of Joss Whedon musicals lately, so that's why I brought him up. So I guess I wanted to lay that on the table. What do we think about the phrase, feminist at heart?
I mean, it's amazing because there are all of these, there's definitely... The books are in the show is so open to feminist interpretation, and there's a lot of very interesting gender politics and that I love. And there's ways that it is subversive, and there are ways which it is not, which is most things. But I think there's more subversiveness than normal fantasy things that aren't directed at young women, which
yeah.
is of course tons.
Yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah, like Tamara Pierce
but
novels.
Within like this like mainstream epic male fantasy
yeah.
stuff. But also I'm like, yay, George R. R. Martin, this is so awesome. But then I'm like, why do you have to be at heart? Why can't you be in life? Why
yeah.
can't you just
in
be
body.
Feminist?
Yeah.
yeah. In body yeah. and in mind and in the show.
In
like,
clothing, even, George.
Yeah, and I think it's more...
He has that jaunty chapeau. I don't know. There must be something going on there.
And so I think that it's a really great thing to say, but I don't think... I think it's more that the culture itself wouldn't accept it if he was just like, I'm a straight-up feminist.
Yeah, and I think...
He can kind of get away with saying that, but by giving it a little extra, like, just at heart, you know?
I think... Sorry, Kate, you're opening... Okay. I think that the other thing is that, like... I don't know. There's sort of, like, an... If we're going to do, like, a close reading, I'm like, those decontextualized, like, three words or whatever. But, like, I think that there is, like, this sort of idea of, like, him being, like... Well, you know, it's almost like even though the show is this way, kind of maybe, like, treats women in this way, I think at heart, secretly, like, I'm a feminist. Like,
I,
despite, like, it's almost like despite what you may think or what you may see, I am a feminist at heart.
That's the thing, is I feel like he was actually maybe apologizing for anything in the show or books that isn't necessarily politically progressive. Like maybe he's like, hey guys, like just so you know, even though X, I'm a feminist at heart. Though that said, except for maybe that expository character that only exists in the show, what's her name?
Roz. I actually grew to love Roz this season, which we can get into.
And I love what, like, I loved everything about that, except for, like, obviously, you know, terrible stuff, but I liked what happened, like, how it was treated. Anyway, we'll talk about it later.
Roz as an interesting
character. Yeah, okay.
But I think that's an interesting idea of, because I never even really consider the show as a sexist show, because I'm just like, you know, as I said, this type of fantasy show is always already so much worse than this.
Yeah.
And that there are really interesting characters. Like, Arya, like, come on. It's like, you can't look at Arya and be like, this guy doesn't think about gender. The show is not, is totally normative.
Or even just having, even,
so like, I don't even consider it, but the sex position, of course, I'm such an idiot that I didn't even think that it could be about that.
But the thing is that I think that there's also a degree to which, we talked briefly about, like, the grammar of video games and the grammar of, like, shooter games, where that's a thing that needs to happen in order to move a plot forward.
Yeah.
And I think there's a certain degree to which there's an inescapable grammar to Game of Thrones that has just established
and
that
HBO
certain,
in general.
And HBO, yeah, and that, like, sort of these things exist within a grammar that's like separate.
Yeah. Not they to, need like, that sex and they need that violence.
Yeah, like those are things that exist in order to like have the show get the $6 million to get made, I think.
Yeah.
Like not that that necessarily forgives things, but also I like you, like I think that the show is doing way more good than bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that like Sansa as a character is very interesting.
Love her.
Absolutely.
Love
and just having
love her name.
It's so pretty.
It's kind of nice. Yeah.
Having from the same family have like Kat, Sansa and Arya, who are all such different women and
totally.
Have such different goals and motivations. And I think that's very interesting as well.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is that like I wouldn't call it like a feminist show. It is existing within a context of like literature and really fitting into like a canon of literature that's pretty inherently like patriarchal. But I think that it's doing things with it that is that are like can be used towards feminist means. I guess like it's sort of did you just say that?
No. Okay. I'm sorry. I made a dumb noise on the chair and then I was embarrassed for myself.
Like it's like rewriting some female characters in a way that you might see, but it's giving them more depth. I think actually, to be honest, like the reason I think Game of Thrones can be used towards feminist ends is that it writes its characters really well, regardless of whether they're like male or female, and it takes into account things that would inform a character like gender. And so, you know, the characters are not like the female characters in the show are not as two-dimensional, nor are the male characters. I think in like a typical that in what you would typically see in a fantasy kind of fiction, like he just treats people with more depth.
I agree.
And lets, but he treats people with more depth, but also lets their gender plays affect their character.
Well, that's part of treating people with more depth, though. Like, to really, I think about a character who is a woman, you have to think about the context they're in and how their womanhood is going to interact with that.
That's specifically a feminist way of going about it. People that are just like, don't consider feminism. They're like, I don't even care if they're man or woman. You know, I want to talk about them as a person. Let's talk about these characters as people. But he actually lets their sex and their gender inform.
Which it would. Yeah, I guess it's a very different way of writing a character than like Aliens, where their gender literally didn't matter and they just
totally.
Decided it sort of arbitrarily or whatever, however they did it. The casting director is going to listen to it and be like, arbitrarily? Obviously, the casting
Sigourney
director Weaver's from Alien.
Just like cry.
and like lose her clothes over the course of the movie. And whereas, these characters are informed by their context, and that's just good writing.
Yeah.
I would say. This season, I mean, I'm sure every season has passed the Bechdel test, but there was a scene that just seemed like, to me at least, that it was specifically included so that TV
like
host
it was
entry.
Like, looking at the Bechdel test, being like, hey.
Fulfilled.
Yeah, check
mark,
this box.
Which was the scene between Shay
and Roz.
And Roz. Your lady's favorite. So let's talk about that. Like the moments
that.
I like
both of those characters.
I like them too.
Yeah.
Oh, is that all we have to say about it?
I just kind of want to touch on that. I guess like this idea of like very. I would feel overtly framing yourself as a politically. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, and just to describe what the moment is that they're talking. It's Shay and Roz are watching Littlefinger and I think Sansa talk to each other far away. And Roz turns to Shay and is like, wow, look at us. We've started from the bottom and now we're here. She says those exact words. And then the rap starts. It says something along those lines. I forget the exact words. I'm sorry. Do you guys remember more?
It was that. I don't know. I wish I knew the rest of that song. Because I make that joke a lot. Started from the bottom. Now
the whole team's fucking here. Started from the bottom. Oh, explicit.
Yes, I'm sure.
So that was just an interesting moment, talking about class and talking about women, the way that they could social climb, or politically climb, because they're not socially climbing, they're politically climbing, the ways that they could politically climb from being a whore, wherever they are from, in
Dorne? Was she from Dorne?
No, she's from the
somewhere far away.
Yeah, one of the free cities.
Mm. But the thing, I just thought of, though, is, I like that scene a lot, too, but, actually, Roz and Shay are very different in the sense that, Roz is at least treated as, politically climbing with a particular intention. Like, she wants to climb, whereas Shay, doesn't really have a lot of interest in climbing. She kind of has climbed by accident because she's with Tyrion, and he sort of put her in that rung.
But she has interest in not being labeled as a low-class being. You know, she talks about, I'm having trouble, but just, remembering her name in particular, or not wanting to be, a maid. And when she first interacts with Sansa in season two, just the way that she's, kind of abrasive to the way that she's being treated by Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
And when, she talks to,
Right.
Bald-headed guy.
Oh,
Varys. The way that they talk to each other, she's clearly very, maybe less politically climbing and just more politically and classist way of being.
I think she doesn't want to be what she was.
Yeah.
But she doesn't necessarily have a motivation to climb. I guess that's true. But I guess what my point was, I didn't really remember any of those scenes. So my point was just kind of her position right now is kind of she's just placed there by Tyrion.
Right.
Guys, I have an important question about Varys.
Yeah.
Do you think eunuchs count as within a queer label? What do you think you do with that?
That's interesting, because I think within the world of the show, they definitely do.
Yeah.
Because they're not considered wholly man or masculine, and they're kind of treated as obviously asexual beings.
And in the book, they always make a deal about how he's, powdered and...
Yeah, exactly, existing in a queer rhetoric. So I think that's an interesting point.
Huh. Hmm. More thinking to do, guys.
And that brings up with the eunuchs of the Unsullied as well.
Yeah.
Kind of quite a racist notion of this army of people that are exactly the same and asexual, moving at the exact same time. I think it's very orientalist, and being asexual.
Literally desexualized.
Yeah. Which is, I think, what, dominant North American cultures do for, China right now, which is, all
sure.
Chinese people look the same, and they all move at the same thing, and they're all very disciplined, and they're all asexual. All the men are asexual.
And they're pleasureless.
The men. The women are very sexual, but the men are...
Oh, for sure.
Asexual.
And also just the idea that, they do not pose a threat to the women of... Though, gotta say, Grey Worm, hot as shit! Was not
totally
desexualized
agree.
To me.
Yeah,
he can use his mouth, it's fine.
Yeah, I don't need a penis.
I can do something with that spiky helmet. It's alright, we can modify his spiky helmet. I'm sure I can talk Grey Worm into this.
Do we want to talk now,
Davos
about...
looked ridiculous. Oh, one more point I'm going to make about objectifying men, because I haven't made a lot.
What?
Davos? Or no, not Davos. Oh, what's... Dario! Dario was the
weirdest-looking
person.
Dario's supposed to be... He's, the guy who cut off the other heads.
He looked exactly
for,
like a Harlequin
for,
romance
no
painting.
Reason.
I know.
That...
And did it for beauty. No, for beauty.
Yeah. His beauty.
His best friends that he traveled with for, a decade. He's she's kind of whimsical.
She's
hot. She keeps me guessing.
Manic pixie dragon girl.
Yeah. His character, I don't like it. I don't like anything that he says. I'm hoping I grow to love him like I do for other characters. But right now I'm I got you. I got your whole persona in second year art school. I get
just,
it.
As an actor, he does, 30 things more with his face than he needs to do at any moment. He'll do something with, eyebrows, nostrils, and mouth, and it's,
I miss Chetan Hagar.
Oh, I miss Jack and Hagar so much. Yeah.
His beautiful hair and face.
Should we transition to talking about how racist that Daenerys
was? Yes, that was what I was trying to transition Daenerys into rather than Hawkeye.
Daenerys had, like, this season and this portion of the books with Daenerys was always my favorite because it gave her the most to do. And I think like, personally, like, I think that when she is clever and, like, outwits these people instead of, like, doing battle, it's my favorite arc for Daenerys. And after this, spoilers, boring. But, the end of the season ended with Daenerys being greeted as a liberator to the, is it Meereen? Yeah.
No, this is Astapor.
Oh, yeah, to Astapor. And what do we think of that scene? What do we think of that closing scene?
She is totally raised on the backs of these people who then reach out to her and call her, what, mother?
Mother.
And, it, like, the way, just filmically, the way it was shot with that. Her white skin was contrasted with a mass of
but also there was
brown skin.
Yeah, and also there was just, like, this African-y music. The second the music started, I was immediately uncomfortable. It was
literally bringing freedom to brown people.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not good to put right now. Like, I know it's an American show, but, like, really? Are you going to politically give this message right now with what's happening in the Middle East?
It's crazy that, how did no, because I feel like immediately,
when they're filming it, the literal difference, how they distinguish her from the other people is the color of her skin and hair.
It's
like, it's just totally wrong.
And it's like set in the most Middle Eastern looking like place.
Yeah.
Like, how did nobody even just like look at a picture on a storyboard or something and was like, you know,
we should not shoot it like this.
Twitter, everyone was just immediately like, guys, this is pretty racist, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think there was immediate, there wasn't any, like, it wasn't someone's clever thought spread.
Yeah.
I think everyone simultaneously had, like, the groupthink thought that was
and
bad.
And other than just the way it was shot in that last scene of, like, the music and the people saying mother, but the whole idea of, what do you guys think of the whole idea of even in the books, white woman coming to free slaves.
What I found really weird because I don't remember having that thought when I read the book. Or maybe I did a little bit, but it wasn't so, there was something that I found a lot less viscerally upsetting when I read the books.
I agree. I'm the same way, but
maybe
a lot of it was like,
you didn't have the images in front of your face.
Yeah, I didn't have the 40,000 brown people.
But also, there was a lot more, I think, about Daenerys being a slave herself.
And that
kind of playing into her backstory, because, like, she was enslaved by Varys and then, like, being forced to marry people and not having any agency of her own. So she had felt the way that feels, and then is trying to be like, well, no one should be a slave. No one should have to go through what I went
Hers
through.
Is more, it was more of a personal rejection of slavery rather than a, like,
weird
cultural
exactly.
separation.
She wasn't trying to necessarily, like, she wasn't necessarily just a do-gooder.
No, she felt like she was identifying with.
Yeah.
What? So is there, like, a scene that the show missed doing? Like, what?
Well, they don't go into that backstory that you guys just mentioned with, like, her, like, the, did you say Varys?
Oh, Viserys.
Her brother.
Oh, her brother.
It's the first season,
okay, yeah. They do go into that. I haven't read the books, everyone. I don't know. I just think that, like, I think what it really is, though, I, again, haven't read the books, so you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, because the show tries so hard to, like, really have this forward momentum that isn't necessarily as present in the books, like, they don't really reflect backwards as much. Like, they don't look back and draw back to her past. It's like, we see Daenerys in this context, and we almost see her out of, decontextualized from her history. And so we kind of just forget about that and just see her now
as,
like, this
really
powerful white woman.
That's a really, really interesting point. That kind of brings up, like, critiques of just the way the show is structured in itself, because
it doesn't cycle back very much.
It doesn't cycle back because you're also not following characters, so it's not, it can never be a character story, because there's always a theme connecting specific things, specific events.
It's directed by time and not people. And
exactly.
The narrative.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
But it does have that fault of, like, that character progression is lost.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Yeah,
or like I'd say, like, it's almost like they you lose the character at the expense of this, like, progression feeling.
Yeah.
Like, they want the momentum more.
Well, scenes that, like, dialogue-y scenes in this are definitely linked to exposition rather than introspection. And so maybe what we've lost is just any sort of roundness from Yeah, from Daenerys. But also Daenerys is the worst.
Yeah, totally.
Whatever.
I mean, it sounds, she's, like, held up as a really feminist being, you know.
Yeah.
Icon to, a, you know, internet icon.
I see her as kind of equivalent to, like, Joan in Mad Men, where every, all feminists spend so much time looking at Joan that they don't see the other characters. It's like
Peggy.
Yeah, people
Peggy
spend
Aria.
So much time looking at Daenerys that they don't see the other females in the
show. I think Cersei, so speaking of interesting, I think Cersei is really interesting. I hate her in the books. Like, she's, like, really despicable. But in the show, it's, like, she's so endearing, and when she talks about,
it's just
like...
the actor's really good.
I think so, too. The actor's really good, but she's also written in a much more caring way.
She sucks,
and she's evil, but she's, like, she loves her kids.
And that's the thing,
and
is they gave her...
Jamie,
they gave her a couple of scenes that weren't there in the book that changed her motivation, like, when she talks about how she knows Joff's a monster.
Yeah.
And she had a moment where she, like, knew her marriage was a sham, and her and Robert toasted to it. There were moments that... made Cersei, well, honestly, it just made her less dumb.
Yeah,
in,
totally.
In the book, she's
and
a lot less
cruel.
Perceptive.
You know, she's very cruel. And in the show, it makes a lot more sense and adds to her character, because really all that, the role of women that she has is through her kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's a queen only because her son is a king.
Mm-hmm.
And so that she's taking advantage wherever she can.
And I actually kind of like that from a feminist perspective, even though I also, like, hate her and find her evil. But, like, from a character perspective, to have, like, a female character whose kind of claim to power and feelings and emotion and love and identity is only through her childbearingness, and then tries to kind of, like, sort of use it, but then also kind of work around it in other ways to kind of make her own claims to power, but it kind of always comes back to her kids, and sometimes she's trying to step around her kids. Like, it's just kind of a nice, like, mess for her as a female identity to, like, be kind of negotiating that, like, motherhood piece.
And she doesn't try to, you know, she loves her kids. She isn't one of those. I think the trope of mom queen is to, like, you know...
The trope of mom queen.
Trope of mom queen is to put your son in a dungeon or hide him away while she takes counsel, you know, tries to fulfill all of the duties, but really she's trying to make Joffrey also be a good king.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think, and then the other, like, mother trope that you see all the time is, like, women who are fulfilled by motherhood. And so I like to see a character who loves her kids and is kind of motivated for them, but at the same time is so obviously not fulfilled.
Yeah, totally.
And so obviously, like, struggling with the fact that she wants her kids to do well, and she loves them, and at the same time she's totally fucking horrified by them. And, like, and, like, in a
way...
Not
just
by
Joff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
true.
I think that she thinks Tommen's pretty weak.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so,
or,
like,
adorable.
Or adorable!
I love me some Tommen.
So, like, that kind of bounce back and forth for her is, like, pretty, pretty nice. And also, like, that, like, idea that, like, her only redeeming feature is that she loves her kids and she's so not satisfied by that.
And her twin brother.
And her twin
brother.
That's
a lot for good, Jamie and her lover, Jamie.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking when she, I mean, like, I know that there are twins and they should not date because it's gross, but heartbreaking at the end when Jamie shows up and Cersei just turns around and doesn't, like, immediately go run to him and, like, hug him.
Yeah.
I was like, Cersei?
No, Cersei. His only
You're
line.
So cold, Cersei.
Yeah. I was just like, you know, he doesn't have a hand, but you guys still loved each other.
Yeah, there was one.
And you guys shouldn't even be together. But for some reason, I'm rooting for her. I just want Jamie to be happy, and I want Cersei to be happy.
I almost wish I hadn't read the book so that I could go through this season of, like, of learning for the first time that Jamie's the best.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
That must have been so cool for people who haven't read the books. Like, being like, oh, this weird guy who threw that dude, like, threw Bran out of a tower. Yeah, and now he's like
child.
When he threw that child off the balcony.
Is so nice.
Yeah, and now we're like, oh, Jamie, like, what a good dude. Like, Jamie's such a good dude.
That's what I love about the show. I also wanted to point out when you were talking that there are just a plentiful female characters in the books.
Yeah.
You know, you have Osha, you have Asha or Yara.
Asha Yara,
and you have all of these characters that is just, like, pretty unbelievable in a fantasy setting where you kind of have a token woman,
woman
or peripheral women, but they're actually, like, so much at the focus.
Yeah,
and I think that's really amazing.
That's true.
They really, like, saturate the narrative.
Yeah,
and they impact the narrative.
They impact
too. For example, a woman we haven't talked about at all.
Oh my God, Marjorie
Tyrell.
First, let's start with her hair.
Let's start
with,
like,
just kidding.
I have
backless gowns. Love it.
Yeah, I just think that she's the most perfect face and body, and I love her.
Though, even though I love the backless gowns, they are hilarious.
Oh, they're, yeah, they're every time.
Do you remember the last season when she had her, like, backless gown lingerie thing?
Do you remember last season when she had that high-collared thing that made her look like a Mass Effect character?
The, like, high-collar thing. I was like, that was the weirdest. Like, I love all of her, like, weird cutout things now.
Do you guys remember when Cersei wore that, like metal armor dress?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
That was pretty awesome.
Was that during the siege?
Season two, yeah. Anyway, I love Marjorie.
So, I think I'm conflicted with her. I love her, the actor who plays her. I think that she's, like, the most beautiful person in the whole world. Her character...
Which is all that really matters.
This crush is, like, the weirdest thing about you. Because it's so strong.
Such a strong crush on her.
It's so strong, too. It's just, like...
As soon as I saw her in Sherlock, I was like, oh my god, that's Marjorie Sherlock.
I think you mean elementary.
In elementary, I
She's in elementary?
She is.
You missed a podcast.
She's a blonde in it, and she's amazing.
You missed a whole podcast where this came up.
Okay, so, but I find her character confusing because it is, like, I love that she kind of, I hate using the word, but I'm going to say, you know, this kind of sexual empowerment where she feels comfortable and, but also, so that's cool. But there's also the utilization of feminine wiles, which I usually think is really hard, but, like, what, that is what she has. Like, what else does she do? It's kind of, again, like Joan in Mad Men, like, Joan is using her feminine wiles, whatever those may be. I'm putting those in quotes because that's a ridiculous term. But her sexuality to, like, get ahead.
There's also a degree to which Marjorie, in contrast to Joan, and also in contrast to Cersei and the other characters in the show, we don't know what Marjorie Tyrell is all about.
Yeah, like,
we see her being winning. Like, she wins several situations. Like, she has that scene with the orphanage where she is winning, in a way. But then she also has a scene with Joffrey in the crossbow where she's performing a completely different character than she was at the orphanage.
Yeah.
And she's winning Joffrey that way. Winning, and she's winning over Sansa.
So she knows how to get ahead.
She's a manipulator. She's a Littlefinger character. Yeah. And so part of it is feminine wiles, but part of it is also just wiles. Like, part of it is
it's
just
character modification. She can just switch.
She's like a fake empath. She
has. What I like both those things, it's like being a caring queen, you know, caring about kids. And then the other one is, like, it's a specifically sexual violence that happens with Joffrey.
Certainly. But there's a degree to which I think Marjorie Tyrell's an interesting character because we don't know what she's doing or why. And whereas, like, Cersei we like because she has a little bit of that, but, like, Marjorie is a little...
Like, what's her game here?
Yeah, like, what's Marjorie's endgame?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like her as well because, like, I don't know, she's, like, I think that there are very brief moments, and I hope we see this more, I haven't, like, I don't know what's coming up for her, but I think that there are brief moments where you can see, like, moments where it's almost like, am I in over my head, or, like, you know, it's like she just is kind of keeping her head above water. Like, there's some moments where she's kind of very briefly, like, scared by Joffrey before she does, like, her little character modification.
Or Cersei,
one of the final episodes where Cersei, like, says she's going to strangle her in her sleep or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, these moments where, like, she kind of, not fucks up her character, but, like, where she's, like, at a decision point in terms of, like, what role she's going to play next.
Yeah.
And I think it is kind of interesting, and I don't know what her motivation is, but I get the perspective from her that she's right now just kind of keeping her head above the water, and she's doing a good job in a way.
I think she's doing a great job.
Yeah, no, she's doing actually a great job, but she's also coming from this really interesting family history, like, with her grandmother, who's, like, the
Lady
character.
Bracknell. Yeah. Like, the typical Victorian matriarch from a wild play.
Yeah,
totally.
It's, like, quippy.
And, and, like, one
surprising grandma.
Yeah, yeah. She has such barbed wit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, the way she's, like, kind of using, like, coming from this context that might have an endgame. And also the way that she's relating to Sansa, I think, is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Like,
but I think she's using Sansa, too.
Probably, like, Yeah.
I think. Because she's... There's, I mean, all the show is always about, like, family and whatever that means, and about, like, the empowering of small groups of people that happen to share the same name. And I expect that, like, the Tyrells are just devious in a way.
Yeah.
You know, and using, like, marrying Sansa is another, like, political, like, it seems like charity, but it's another way to, like, reinforce their claim on the throne.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget that Sansa has a lot of claim to the North.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that, what's-his-face is dead? What's-his-face?
Rob.
Little
Robbie.
Little Rob. Yeah.
So I think that is all very political and interesting. Sansa's an interesting character this season.
Because she's not just crying all the time anymore.
She's not just crying all the time. And she wasn't ever. Remember, in season
but season two,
one,
she toughened the fuck
even
up.
Even season one, she considered pushing, or maybe it was the end of
season one, she considered
pushing Joffrey off the thing, and she gets pulled back by the Hound. But it's like, I don't know, I think that she's just a lot confusing. Because it plays on the archetype of, like, I want to write a paper about Game of Thrones and, like, literary justice, because I think it plays on this, like, with Theon, like, he takes over Winterfell, but they totally, like, destroy Theon this season, you know?
Yeah.
And then with Sansa, it's like, oh, you wanted to marry him. You wanted to have, like, that normal queen life, and now look at
you.
You
were asking for
it. Yeah, and so, but it kind of plays off, it's kind of like victim blaming, but it's like, disproportionate, so I think it points to how much we might root for that, like, that literally justice.
No, that's
so, like,
I,
we don't want that to happen.
It's like,
to Theon,
kind of
like
it turns to you as an audience member and like, says, isn't this what you wanted? And you're
exactly.
like, no!
And there's
it
a lot of examples of that throughout the book, and
that's
really amazing.
Or
I think
I was going to spoil a bunch of things. So many things!
We've been pretty good.
I've had a couple moments.
Yeah, me too. Where I want to point out things.
And
but anyway,
I just
want to
do it as a joke.
So
it's going to be cruel.
Yeah, so that's... Did you hear... someone just posted on my Facebook of some women gamer was wearing a BioShock Infinite shirt, and some dude came up to her and was like, I bet you haven't even played that game, because she's, like, really hot. And then she spoiled the ending for him, and his face just, like, cried, because it was such
really
an intense
funny.
Ending, and I thought it was just such
that's
great justice.
So funny.
Yeah.
But is he now the Theon of his
no.
season? Is he now
deserved?
Is he
deserved. Fucking so
that's
deserved.
Yeah.
I liked. It's crazy that they brought Theon's plotline in this season. I liked that.
Yeah, I like that too.
Keep that going.
Oh, so creepy, guys.
Yo, especially because Buddy
is so hot. Fuck yeah!
I
mean,
I
in
don't
the show,
see that.
I know because in the show it's disgusting. But if you watch Misfits, the first season, you're still like,
Simon.
But then later, you're like, fucking
it's not
yeah.
even like later. It's like a specific moment.
Yeah,
there's
a specific
moment where you see him back
like,
in a shower,
and
you're
like,
oh shit, Simon.
All right,
and then
suddenly it's like, wow, your face is really perfect.
Yeah, like, oh, your chest is doing something
bad.
Special.
Yeah, but in the show, I don't find him attractive.
No, of course not.
He's gross.
So I guess Theon now counts in the like Game of Thrones annals of queerness. I guess now we get to loop him in
now
there.
He is eunuch.
Yeah, now he is eunuch.
Oh, I hated the scene where Yara was like, I am going to sail across.
Oh, yeah,
the
there's like epic sailing music.
And I am
music.
Going to do this. And I'm like, great. I mean, like, yay, women doing things.
But
I'm also like,
they need to, I mean, I like.
Yara was so not a developed character.
Yeah, and actually, like, gets her moments. There's a couple there's a couple scenes I really like.
Yeah, in the book, she's pretty tough.
Yeah, but her motivation being, like, strictly family is a lot sillier than her motivation being, like, no, like, this is what you do.
For yeah, exactly. For, like, self-honor, self-righteousness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many women in the show.
I know. I'm like trying to get all of them.
Yeah.
But, like,
okay, who are we?
We haven't even really talked about Roz.
Oh my god, right? Roz.
Oh my god, or Talisa. Ugh.
Who?
Rob's wife.
Oh.
Does anyone like her?
She's dead now.
No, Jane in the books. Talisa in the book in the TV show, HBO series.
Oh my god. Yeah. I mean, like her getting specifically stabbed in the stomach. I guess is sad.
Yeah,
and by I guess it's that, I mean is sad.
Yeah, but yeah, the Babby Stark is no more.
Stomach, yes.
But she sucked.
Yeah,
she sucked.
That character, I feel like that character was too much of a trope. Like that, she wasn't
the perfect wife,
and that relationship as well. Like that's the only relationship that ever existed that was like uncomplicated and pure.
And that one just rubbed me the wrong way too. The first time we saw her, and she was like tough lady sawing a leg. She's been through some shit. It's like, oh really? Like we're gonna do this?
They're trying so hard to get us to like her.
Yeah,
she's very different from the books, and I think that they should have kept her the same.
In that she's a completely different character.
Yes,
yeah,
a different name.
Like, literally not the same person.
But they tried so hard to make us, like, root for them. And I guess, I don't know, how much did you root for them? How much were you shocked by Robb Stark's death?
I was shocked a lot by the death. I wasn't really rooting. I was rooting for, like, the North. Like, I wanted, like, the Starks to win because I like the Stark
family. I feel like we should all give up on that.
Pick the wrong team, guys. Like, I like Catelyn Stark a lot. Robb Stark I never cared about very much. And I didn't like his wife very much. Like, Catelyn Stark, I always liked.
Yeah.
So many women!
But, and in terms of the wife, like, that whole marriage thing, I thought that was always really silly. And also in season two, when they would have, like, these, like, kind of cuts for their, like, lovemaking scenes with, like, a lone cello playing in the background, it, like, stopped the whole narrative.
Sorry, I just pictured, like, actually in the tent with them.
Yeah, the cello player. Yeah.
It just, like, it really, like, for me, like, it didn't fit with, like, the broader kind of narrative. Like, it would always, like, yeah. I always felt like every time we were seeing the two of them on screen, like, the whole story was stopping.
They felt like a stop point. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And so I'm kind of, like, I'm sad that, like, that was a very shocking scene for me, but I'm kind of, like, I'm okay with them dying in the sense that, like, now I don't have to feel like the narrative stops anymore. But I will miss Catelyn Stark a lot. And I still wanted them to win the North. Like, I thought they deserved it. I was rooting for them.
Oh, my God, you guys, what about Ygritte?
Ygritte!
We have so many characters to get through. I know Ygritte, we have to wrap up. I just want to point out the one scene where Jon Snow was like, aren't you going to faint at the sight of blood? And she was like, what's fainting? Yeah. Like, or what's swooning or whatever?
Yeah.
And then he's like, women see more blood than men anyway. And I think that was just
Yeah, that's great.
It was great, but it's also kind of like a nod to how normal women are, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, she's special because she's not this normal woman.
Oh, that's true. But then...
But it might not be.
But then also, I guess, like, that this conversation was like that, but the show doesn't have that opinion, really, or the other characters aren't really like that either.
Yeah, swoony.
Yeah, there aren't any characters who are, like, Sansa is moving away from that, but I don't think we've seen anyone swoon.
Yeah.
It'd be funny if, like, one dude had swooned, and that was, like,
yeah,
a thing. I don't think it is.
Yeah. So I guess we should wrap this up. I mean, I feel like we're missing a million.
Okay, female character.
Oh my god, I can't choose my favorite character.
You have to.
I'm always, okay, the thing is, in the books, I'm always really excited for Sansa chapters, I'm always really excited for Arya chapters, obviously. I mean, least favorite is probably fucking Talisa, fucking Daenerys, all those motherfuckers.
I'm listening to the fifth book podcast right now, and I've actually been enjoying the Daenerys chapters a lot more than when I read them.
Where was she in the fifth book? Oh god, really?
A lot more, because I hated them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how much it's saying, but I found them really enjoyable.
I should re-listen
so
to the fifth.
So I've been having a more of a soft spot for Daenerys, so she is not my favorite character. I mean, my least favorite character. I think also probably Arya.
It's such an easy answer, but she's, like, just even in just the combination of how good that actor is. And
I mean, the thing is, with the way the show is structured, you have such little time with each of the characters, and I think her character progression is so amazing, but you don't really get to see it because it's so blocked.
Yeah.
And obviously Arya plus Gendry for life.
Oh, remember that time she would be his lady?
I know!
And I screamed at the television.
I didn't even think I heard it. I was just like, oh my god, I'm so excited.
I got text messages from you and Howard about it before I watched it.
You
was
texted
like,
me.
Oh, did I? Yeah. You texted me something else. Oh, maybe Dario?
Oh, we never talked about Melisandre.
Oh god.
She does
the actor's voice.
The terrors. I wanted to
do that. Oh, that was a good impression. Do it again?
No. I can't.
The Terrors. Terror, that sounded nothing like her.
That was Kate. I just want to be clear. Also interesting because, you know, has babies. Smoke monster babies.
Yeah, that was season two, though.
And uses her feminine
wild. Her feminist wild.
Her feminist wild.
That's our title.
Yeah, that's our title. Okay, great. Let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up. I'm just going to quickly mention Podrick Payne's giant dick again, because
that was my favorite plotline this season.
Obviously, it was the stupidest thing in the world.
Virgins are really good at sex. Thanks, fantasy TV show.
Yeah.
That's a nod.
That was the most wish-fulfilly thing this season. Is like, totally. Yo, hey, virgins watching this show, don't worry about it. You're great at it. You'll get paid. It's Grand Theft Auto and you've done that mission.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see you soon. Maybe the next thing we'll do is that mini supplement for the East, and by we, I mean you two and not
we're gonna
I.
We're going to talk about body hair too, guys.
Talk about body hair. And I think I really want to talk about The Last of Us and Bioshock Infinite and this weird companion trope that's happening in video games. So I guess until next time, guys, let us know in the comments who your favorite lady character is.
And I feel like we've probably missed out a whole lady character.
Oh, well, Melisandre I completely
forgot
existed.
Yeah, I know, me too.
There definitely is a main plot that we're forgetting.
So, hit us up with any people that we may have missed and want to hear our feminist feedback on.
Yeah, and until next time,
yeah, I mean, like, what are you gonna
mantra.
Say? Until next time,
live as a feminist.
Good one.
No,
don't then.
Don't.
I didn't want you to.
No, I don't want you to. Just kidding, do it.
Have a friend.